Fearless Voyager Radio. Self-development radio for the open mind. Interviews with leading-edge authors and speakers, psychic phenomena and the unexplained, UFOs, extraterrestrial encounters, government cover-ups, alternative health care, new technologies. And now, Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes for Timeless Voyager Radio, and my guest today is Ted Ward. He is the co-director of the Foundation for Life Action. They are a nonprofit educational organization. Ted has spent the last 10 years studying A Course in Miracles in Los Angeles with a small group of men and women. We're going to talk about A Course in Miracles. Welcome to the show, Ted.
Nice to be here.
All right. Tell us a little bit about this self-study program that is called The Course in Miracles.
Well, basically, I got to give you a little bit of background of where it came from and why it came into being. At this particular time, you have a psychologically bound society, which we find ourselves in, that we've been disillusioned with many of the different churches and organizations that have cropped up over the years. So it's actually a prime time at this particular time for something new to come into this planet and to boost ourselves back to our own level of thinking, more or less, from where we came. I'm noticing that with this time, it has degenerated into a position where we call it the time when the lie becomes the truth and the truth becomes the lie. Our words don't mean anything anymore, so something had to come to get us out of this and to relate us back to something that's normal or original. So the Course in Miracles has come about at that time to where it has this structured around a workbook, which is 365 lessons, which you do one each day, and the text, which basically explains what is the basis of our lifestyle, the ego, and the life that we have built. And then it goes on to the teacher's manual, which is the third volume, which when you get that far, the whole course is structured around, if you want to get out of your illusions, you have got to teach others how to get out of theirs. So the whole thing is structured in a very unique way. It's a step-by-step program that you can use by yourself to get yourself out of the situation which you found yourself in.
Okay, probably the most important thing I think for people to know then is A Course in Miracles is actually a way of life, isn't it?
Yes, it has to become a way of life. It's not something that you can learn and go back to the way that you were. You have to actually integrate it into your life to see that it works. And the more you see it works, the more faith you build in it and the more trust you begin to have in yourself.
So now when a person does a course like The Course in Miracles, I guess this isn't philosophy as much as it is actual practice. Is that, or is it both?
Well, the philosophy, from my understanding, you have to start with an idea to begin with, and that's where philosophy starts. Philosophy is an idea, and then it emerges and transforms itself into a way of life. And a way of life is not a philosophy, it's a way of living. So you start off with the ideas, like the first lesson says, nothing I see means anything. Well, that's a very ludicrous idea for most people to think that nothing I see means anything. I mean, you've got people starving to death. You've got people laying on the streets. We've got a deficit that's sky high. And we have catastrophes all around us. So if you went into the text and began to study what it is, what it's talking about, nothing I see means anything, it begins to see that I have given the fear angle of it all the meaning it has for me. You begin to undo those perceptions that we have about the world, about ourselves, about our neighbors. And those inherent in those fears are the reasons why we do the things that we do. We need a lot of money in the bank because we're afraid of tomorrow. Or we need to arm ourselves to go against another country because we're going to get invaded. So everything is related to that. And it's a very central theme. So in other words, the basis of it revolves around that there is only one brain in the world. And with this one brain, if you understand how yours works, you will understand how all of them work. And when you find out how it is that you have undermined yourself and made yourself afraid, you would not in turn do that to another person, because you're actually teaching and learning at the same time. So if you see every situation that you're in as a teaching learning situation, you're not going to teach your brother to be fearful or make him defensive, because you're teaching yourself the same thing. So if you want out of it, you have to teach another person how to get out of it.
The Course in Miracles, of course, was not just made up recently. This was information that came from a gentleman by the name of Tara Singh. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about Tara Singh.
Well, Tara Singh, actually, he came from India, and he had outgrown many of the different aspects in that era when it was when Gandhi's era was mainly coming to an age, and he was associated with the Prime Minister Nehru for quite some time. And he basically outgrew the status symbol of it, the thought that you could actually do some good on a large basis, on a large scale. And he actually came to America to see what was the impact of science on society. And he came to see if he couldn't better the relationships between India and America and get trade agreements going and different things there happening. So automatically he met many different people in the UN. He met Eleanor Roosevelt and Mr. Huxley and all the people who were basically running and making the laws of the country at that time. And he saw that he couldn't get anything across to him, that they basically had to deal with the issues of overpopulation. They were dealing with things on a much different level. So he gave up thinking that you could get anything done at that level. So he just started to rely on the grassroots level. Could anything be done with the individual? So that's basically where he began. He came in contact with the scribe of the course, which was Helen Schuckman. And he was really thrown by the first sentence of the course, which basically sums up the whole course in its essence when saying nothing real can be threatened and nothing unreal exists. He saw that phrase when he opened the book on the desk one day, and he closed the book back, and for weeks he was just in another state, just another place.
Okay, I've got to interrupt you. What book are we talking about here?
Course of Miracles.
All right, so now, in other words, Tara Singh himself did not give the information that the Course in Miracles book is from?
No. He was the student of the course. He was a student of the actual person, the scribe, which was Helen Schuckman.
Okay, now when you use the term scribe, and we'll back up and clear a few of these things up here, but this is very interesting here. Then Dr. Helen Schuckman is actually the woman who, now use the term scribe, and of course scribe has a lot of different meanings depending on who's using it. When I use the term scribe, I think of someone who intuits information from a source which is, let's say, transcendental or something like that. Would that be a good way to describe it?
Well, it's a very different state. Not having been in that place, it's very hard to describe. I'll have to describe it to you as it's been described to me. From my understanding, Jesus, or the Christ, is a state of being. It's a state of being which every man has the potential to meet, but yet we don't meet that state because basically we're preoccupied with what's going on with this planet. Helen Schuckman rose to a state and met that Christ state, and then she wrote down what it is that she was supposed to write down from what we call the author of the course, which is Jesus. He told her what to write, so she took it down in a written form. Her basic background was psychology, so the whole thing was written around the psychologically bound mind and a way to release that.
Okay, so what we're looking at here is that Dr. Helen Schuckman, in a sense, consciously, now of course, you haven't used the word channeled, so I'm going to just throw it in, and if you say no, that's fine with me. But to, from my understanding, she's consciously channeling this information.
Well, channeling, to me, is a little bit different. It would be that you wouldn't have to necessarily rise to that state. You would be in a different state, but not that lofty a state. Then things would become through you, like many channeling effects do, but they don't necessarily, they haven't met the state. It's just been talked through them. A voice comes through them, and it's much different.
Okay, so what we are actually, or what you are actually saying, then, if I understand this correctly, is that Dr. Shookman rose to the state of Christ consciousness that we talk about or hear about very often.
Yes, very much.
In that state, then, is where she actually brought through the information from the Christed consciousness and wrote it into a book called Course in Miracles. Is that right?
That's exactly it.
Okay. Well, then why don't you continue, because this is very interesting, and I just wanted to clear up that little spot there. So we have Dr. Helen Shookman. Maybe, I don't know if you know a lot about her, but do you know a little bit about her? Maybe give us a little background?
Not enough to even speak about. I've read about her, but I don't have the knowledge and the background to speak a lot about her. It would have to be from someone who was much closer, and I couldn't even talk about it.
We were talking about Tara Singh. Now, why don't we jump back to Tara Singh for a second? I noticed that in one of the information sheets that I got from the Tara Center, the Foundation for Life Action, they give an interesting background. I noticed that he spent a tremendous amount of time, for example, in the Himalayas as an ascetic.
Yeah, he spent about between 4 and 5 years there. Basically, what it was that he had touched upon something in India while he was there, and he had talked with a saint there. And he decided that he wanted to give his life to something that very lofty. And this was the background in India, that when you outgrow things, then you spend time in the Himalayas and you try and get in touch with the essence of a religion. In that particular time, it was the Sikhism. And he basically outgrew the idea that you couldn't sit in a cave your whole life and really do any good on this planet. So he basically walked away from that, seeing that your basic religions are only good to a certain degree, and you have to outgrow things to continue. There's one particular phrase that a man called Vivekananda, which was Ramakrishna's student in India, he said that you have to be true to the religion that you were born in, but just don't die in it. So the basic issue is that you have to know what religion is in its essence. So he began to do a search, and his search carried him all around the globe. He went from saints to different people who had outgrown the world in India and still couldn't find it. So he basically ran on to Krishnamurti, which was in New York City, and Krishnamurti was what we consider a world teacher, and he had a few conversations with him that just totally changed his life. One of the basic things that he told him was that there are no problems apart from the mind. Now, that doesn't sound like anything to us, but for somebody who has been sitting for 4 to 5 years and looking all around the globe, and for somebody to tell you that there is no problems in life, that's a very lofty statement.
Okay, so the statement was there are no problems apart from the mind. That's important. I don't know if that came across from your end, and I wanted to repeat that. Is that a basis, then, that Tara Singh began to move on?
Yes, that is the one of the basic things. It started to unfold for him. Whenever you have a lofty being that imparts something to you, it's for your whole life, and that will continuously unfold for you the rest of your life in different ways. Like you can say, you can look at the first lesson of the Course and say, nothing I see means anything. And also related to, there are no problems in life. If you see a problem, then you have made a problem. If there are no problems in life, then you can honestly say, nothing I see means anything. I have given everything I see all the meaning it has for me. So any problems that crop up, because there's a definite challenge in front of you, this man who you respect that has told you something, that there are no problems, you see a problem, So then basically you stop and you undo it. You see where it came from, how it started, and you undo it in your own mind from which where it started.
Now it sounds to me like, and of course a lot of people are going to probably think this, that what you're doing is coming up with ways to somehow just change your viewpoint, and then the problem is supposed to change. Now, this doesn't sound like it's going to work well, but why don't you comment on what I just said?
That's okay. Yeah, the whole thing you have to remember is that you're working it towards an internal issue. In other words, we see problems that are external. We have no control over the economy. We have no control over how this person responds to us. We have no control over our wives, our kids. Everything seems to be out of our control. But if somebody told you that there are no problems in life, then it has to be looked at internally. So all of a sudden, it's no longer an external problem. It's an internal problem. Now it's in my control. It's in my court, okay, if you will. So dealing with something that is now internal instead of external is the first step. So that's where the course came into being. It came into being to be able to deal with things in proportion to the problem. In other words, the problem, if the problem is internal, then you're working with it internally, not externally.
Now, let's again come back to Tara Singh. Well, we're talking about Tara Singh, but he was introduced then to the Course in Miracles book in 1976. I guess that was when you said he had opened up the book and saw that first line. What was his action after that?
The action after that was basically he had established a relationship with the scribe, Helen Shipman, and kept an ongoing relationship by telephone with her for over 3 years from that point. And at that particular point, she basically confronted him with all of his issues, as any teacher would. She basically didn't want to be a teacher, but for lack of a better word, anyone who wants to aspire to their own essence in this life has got to have some direction in life, and somebody has got to challenge us. But the main difference between Tara Singh and the way that we look at things is that he had great reverence for people who could impart truth to them. And so we have kind of lost reverence for everything in our lives. So it's very difficult for us to understand that when somebody confronts us with something, we basically just want to tell them to go to hell and then walk off. But they could be telling us the truth, and we'd never know it. So she confronted him with all his life issues. And from my understanding, the basis of what their conversations revolved around was gratefulness. That if he could possibly begin to have gratefulness for life, for everything that was happening in his life, we see it as a problem, we see it as conflict, we see it as not out of our control. But if we could be grateful for what life is confronting us with, we would have the energy and the insight from which to deal with things in a proportionate way.
Now, was gratefulness his personal challenge, or is that a challenge that all of us have?
It basically was imparted to him as beginning with his issue. And his issue, from what I understand when we began talking about, there is only one brain in the world. There's not a Russian brain, there's not a Chinese brain, there's not a Japanese brain, American brain. Fear is fear. Insecurity is insecurity. So all these different aspects which we give names to are all one and the same. So gratefulness was given to him so he could discover for himself the difficulties to getting through this. It's an internal issue with gratefulness. In other words, we have in us ingratitude. If I could put it into essence with you, if you've ever seen children on Christmas morning, if you give them 30 presents, they're looking for the 31st. So we aren't even integrated into gratefulness even from the day one. So if you could look at this planet, the way that we revolve, the major issue, from my understanding, which she had imparted was, it's a lack of gratitude. It's ingratitude that's killing us. And you can connect every single problem we have to this essence. So what she did was focusing in on the essence of what the issue was of mankind. And that's what she taught. And every time he had a question about the course, she would repeat, just do the lesson. Inherent in the lesson of the day is every answer that you need.
Your organization is the Foundation for Life Action. Now, I understand this is the one that Tara Singh created 10 years ago. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It began, as Tara Singh put it, started out of naivety. In other words, they were very naive about what it is that mankind needed. In other words, he believed that if somebody had had friendship or somebody around to tell them different things, that and it created an atmosphere for people that people could get out of their predicaments much easier than the way he had done it. He had searched and searched and longed for a teacher to tell him, and he had spent, 50-some years looking, that if a person had access to the compassion and the loving caringness and an atmosphere, that they could progress much quicker. This is the way that he envisioned it.
Now, it was 1983 when Tara Singh offered this one-year non-commercialized retreat for a serious study of A Course in Miracles, and there was no tuition charged, and about 50 people came from all over the world to study. Is that still going on, and how many are left?
Well, it basically began that way in 1983 with the non-commercialized retreat. It was a one-to-one relationship with Tara Singh, with The Course in Miracles as being the central focus point. And yes, indeed, it was a non-commercialized, which a lot of people don't understand what that means. It means that Tara Singh was giving workshops and retreats all around the world at that time, and he was making over $300,000 a year just doing that. He stopped doing that to do the one-year retreat and gave his total focus to each individual there, and the only thing that was charged for was just the rent and the lights. In other words, we all kicked in a little bit of money just to keep the place moving. So it was non-commercial in a way that he taught us such a variety of backgrounds of all the Indian literature, all the Chinese literature, everything from Russia, from America, all our forefathers. It was an incredible college degree experience that we've had. So it mainly revolved around having 2 to 3 hour sessions in the morning, 2 to 3 hour sessions in the evening, and most of the time it was maybe an hour in between. So you're talking between 6 and 7 hours every single day, 7 days a week for a whole year of session. So you can imagine what took place. It was very, very intense.
Now, my understanding is that it's, I guess, kind of set up like an ashram would have been in the sense of what an ashram is, which is a place where one studies these truths. But I think my question is that you have, I guess, a certain amount of yogic instruction also. Is that correct?
No, not really. Our basis is not really based around yoga. Yoga is something that you have to change your lifestyle for. We haven't even gone into that yet. He had quite a bit of background in yoga. Tara Singh began to teach us that, but he found that nobody was ready. Not for the true sense of the word of yoga. So it's not really an ashram background as much as it is, it's a school, okay? It was a school for teachers, for teaching the Course of Miracles to people to become teachers. That's the way it began, and that's what it still is to become teachers of A Course of Miracles, which the world needs very badly. But I can tell you at this particular point, no one has emerged as a teacher. It's been over 10 years.
All right. A quick question here. Is Dr. Shukman still alive?
No, she is not.
All right. So the scribe of A Course of Miracles is no longer alive. Now, the book, then, is the basis of all of the course study. Is that correct?
Which book is that?
The book, The Course in Miracles.
Yeah, that's the basis for everything that we do is living the course in our daily existence. That's the essence of everything that we do.
Now, you have been in the school since the beginning, is that correct?
Since 83, yes.
All right, now how did you happen to meet Tara Singh? How did this happen with you?
Well, basically, I had been searching also, not as diligently as Tara Singh, obviously. I'd gone from California through monasteries, through ashrams in the 60s and 70s, and ended up being in an ashram in 1981 in Pennsylvania, when I had basically been leaning towards, I have always carried a picture of Christ with me. That it, not that I studied under Christ or anything, but it felt good to me. And in this particular ashram, they didn't, they would allow it for so long, but they wanted you to change over to your different Ganeshas, your elephants, your Ramas, and your Krishnas. And I just didn't feel it. And so eventually we came to a disharmony about that. But in the meantime, a particular person that I had come in contact with passed by my room and saw the picture hanging on the wall and introduced me to the Course of Miracles. So in 1981, I became introduced to it. I took it back to New York, where I was staying at that time upstate, and studied it for a whole year without telling anybody that I even had it. I didn't want to be influenced at all about anything. And at that particular time, the Foundation for Inner Peace sends you a mailing card that you can send it in and get on the mailing list of everybody who's doing the Course of Miracles. And at that time, I thought, well, it'd really be nice to become associated with different people who were doing the course also. So I sent the card in, and I got an invitation from the Foundation for Life Action for the one-year retreat. And at that time, they asked me, you know, to go to one of the workshops of Tara Singh to see if indeed I fit in or liked it or they liked me. The whole thing had to become harmonious. It was still very sketchy at that point. So I met Tara Singh in 1982, late 1982, just before the year retreat in Holyoke, Massachusetts. And at that time, I could see that definitely he had something that I needed. And I asked if I could come for the year retreat, and they all agreed, so that's where I showed up. Well, sponsored is probably pretty close to a good answer, yeah. Basically, when we got together in 1983 to do the one-year retreat, after the year retreat was over, we decided that we really wanted to stay on, that we could see that there was great merit in this style of life. And to fit back into a job and the different things that we were doing before just didn't seem right for some reason. I mean, we could have done it, but we found that it gave us our lives greater meaning to be with course-related materials, the Foundation, and Tara Singh. So being sponsored, we actually had to work. We put books and tapes together about the year retreat, about the Course in Miracles, and began selling them through bookstores and people who we knew to just survive and pay the rent. And that's the way we started, and that's the way it still continues. We definitely have a lot of other structures going, but we get too involved at this point to talk about those things.
So all right, so basically you have this thing set up almost like a monastery, and that a monastery might make wine or cheese or cookies or whatever, and you are actually making books about the work that you're studying and then using that information and the financial remuneration to continue the work. Is that right?
Yes, it's very interesting because when you work through something, when you work through financial situations, when you work through emotional situations and situations where you have a family crisis and things like this, they become valuable to other people to see how is it that the course applies in this instance. Okay, so that's where the books and tapes emerge from.
All right, so I promised our listeners that we would talk specifically about A Course in Miracles, and I know that there are certainly things that are very difficult to go into on the air, but I think that we can give people a good taste anyway. Let's bring up some issues and perhaps give me some examples on how Course in Miracles would deal with it. I think a lot of people certainly have a hard time dealing with the concept of death. How does Course in Miracles address that issue?
Well, the concept of death is basically gotten into a superstition, hasn't it? I mean, it's gotten to where nobody really knows for sure. We've studied it. We've tried to get seances. We've tried to get different people to tell us what it is. But in actuality, we don't know what it is. We all know that it's coming at some time. We would much rather deal with the fear of death rather than working with the death itself, because death is still an idea for us. It's still in a distance. It's not a relative thing. But the fear of death is relative. It's real. And it's confronting us at this moment.
If I were to use something from the beginning of the book that you mentioned, I guess nothing we see is real. I mean, this would apply real well here because in actuality, we are either here or we are not here. And when we are not here, we have no choice, as it were. So this concept of death really is a fear issue, isn't it?
It very much is, yes. But if you deal with the fear rather than the moment of death is too distant for us. It's too far away. And I was reading a book on Socrates, and basically he said that a philosopher deals his whole life for the moment of death. Okay, so every moment you're living and dying in every moment, rather than waiting to deal with something at the moment of death. It's too late at that point. So you need to deal with things now, the issues now, because from my understanding, and I don't want to go too far into it, but from my understanding, the issues that we have now and the desires that we have now keep us reincarnating. They keep us coming back, okay? If we don't deal with issues with the parents, if we don't deal with issues of the children, we don't deal with the fear issues, with the issues of desire for females or males, if you don't deal with these issues, they'll keep you coming back. So we'd much rather deal with the essence of it. If there are no problems apart from the mind and nothing I see means anything, then let's deal with those issues now and see what meaning have we given them to confuse us if they have no meaning in themselves.
So I guess the thing is that if a person spends their entire life thinking about what death is and what it's going to be like, they're missing the entire point of living.
Exactly. You're living in a dream. You've missed the whole point of the whole thing. So I'm noticing that there is a strong connection between not doing what you came here to this planet to do and the fear of death. In other words, everybody understood when we were going to school that if you didn't do your homework that you were assigned on Friday, and Sunday night came, there was a lot of fear and anxiety, wasn't there? It's the same thing. If you feel like you have not done your homework all the way along, and you get to the other end, basically you've missed the point. You haven't done your homework at all. So there is things to do every single day. There is many things to do, and we're overlooking the issue.
So this is kind of like the person who's got that term paper that's off in the distance, that's getting closer and closer, and finally when the due date comes, it's impossible to get it done, isn't it?
Exactly. So there's a great anxiety with that. There's a great fear with that. And in dealing with older people who have waited that long, it becomes very taxing for them. They want to find the easiest way out. They want a magic word, and there just is none.
All right, what about another issue like bringing harmony to relationships? How does The Course in Miracles address that issue?
The harmony between relationships is a unique thing. I give you, for instance, everybody has a particular issue, probably with their mothers. I know I do, as being a male, and I'm 43 years old right now. And I had such a hard time with my mother for many years, and I couldn't understand why. My basic understanding is that if you would take, there's one lesson in the Course that says, in my defenselessness, my safety lies. Now, I didn't understand this at all. I thought, if I'm defenseless, she's just going to knock me down and drag me all over the world. I didn't understand what the premise behind this was. And one day, Tara Singh looked at me and says, look, you have to make harmony with your mother. It's a necessity on this planet. She brought you to this planet. She cared for you, loved for you, and raised you to a place to where you are who you are right now. You have to acknowledge this. So basically, I grabbed some flowers, went running to my mother's house, and I didn't know what was going to take place. And she was very surprised. We went out to dinner. And a large part of what I thought and I had given meaning to wasn't even there. So over the years, this relationship between my mother and I has been healing itself in a way that I just can't describe. When she calls me on the phone now, or I call her on the phone now, the one thing that I found is that I make sure she's the one that hangs up. I make sure that when she says, well, I think I've held you on the phone long enough, I hold her on the phone for another 15, 20 minutes. And we talk about meaningful things. We talk about what's going on in the world. We talk about what's going on in the family. And you incorporate the course lessons into it. You, not in a way that you would, hammer on her about it or be a Bible pounder by any means, but nothing, I don't even mention any words in the course like nothing I see means anything. I've given everything all the meaning it has for me, things like that. But when she comes up with things from the past that she's still angry at me about, I don't even acknowledge that they're even real. You just go by them and say, yeah, I can see your point of view in this particular situation, and I can see where I was wrong. And it just, it disarms her. It takes all of the energy away from it. So I'm noticing there's a way of talking to your family, there's a way of talking to friends about grievances that actually disarm the whole thing. That's the reason we came to this planet. That's our function here. And what else would you want to do but to bring peace to everyone around you? So that's the importance that I have found out of doing the lesson of the day. Inherent in the lesson of the day gives you the energy to deal with these issues.
How many lessons are there?
There's actually 365 lessons. There's one for every day of the year.
But of course, a person could do one lesson for 10 years, right?
They could, but basically what we found is that after one day, the ego's found a way of familiarizing itself with it. In other words, you can meet a stranger on the street, and after one day, it's no longer a stranger, is it? I mean, you become familiar with that person. After a week with the person, it's no different than anybody else. So what we found is that the ego or the brain has a way of making everything mundane. So every lesson of the day has a new energy to it. You change lessons even though you may not understand the essence of it. You change lessons of the next day, and it gives you something new. It doesn't give you time to make it familiar. You see what I'm saying?
So are you, in a sense, just doing a lesson a day, year after year after year?
Exactly. Year after year after year. And you find after you've done the 365 lessons, you come back to the first one, and it's new again. And you see it differently. You understand a little gleam of light about what it says, nothing I see means anything. The basis of the course is that you are not a body, you are still free, and you're still as God created you, that you have the means to recognize that you are free. And inherent in the lesson gives you that confidence to take another step, to see, I am as God created me, I'm not a body, and if you're not a body, you can't hold grievances.
Let's talk a little bit about addiction recovery. That's a very big issue these days. How would A Course in Miracles help people in addiction recovery?
Well, addiction recovery, to me, you'd have to understand, first of all, how does a person get into it? Why would a person begin to get into either on the drugs or the alcohol? And basically, you begin by looking at that. There is a sense of freedom with it. There is a sense of freedom of expression. There is a sense of freedom of not having as much pressure on you as normally you would. There is a sense of freedom while you're in the aspect of the drugs. But it doesn't last. And you begin to see that the reason you began it begins to switch now, and you become dependent on it, don't you? I mean, the whole reason behind drinking is because there's so many pressures on mankind at this particular time. We grew up with the pressures, and the pressures become too great for us. My whole understanding about the course and the way that I have viewed it is that in the beginning, it's a little bit tough to kick the habit of it because it's we have a society which is expedient, if you will. In other words, we want it right now. We want a gratification right now. And that's what drugs gives us. It gives us an immediate release, but you'll notice it doesn't last. So then you have to turn for something that's going to give you that same release, but in a way that you never have to become addicted to something, or it hasn't got what I call an opposite. In other words, drugs have an opposite. Alcohol has an opposite. You have the highs, but then you've got the lows, and you're destroying your body at the same time. So that's what I call opposites. You have the highs, but you have the lows. The course, to me, is a way of getting out of this. It's a step-by-step program, but it doesn't have the lows. doesn't have an opposite to it. In other words, you're going in a direction now which will release you completely, but it doesn't have any repercussions to it. You're doing what you came here to this planet to do. So does that answer your question at all? Does it even get close?
Yeah, in other words, I guess what we're finding out is that the true freedom is found in dealing with our issues and not in getting away from the issues, which is the illusion of what the freedom is about.
Right. You're using drugs to release you from your thought system or the problems that revolve around the complexity of the thought. And the Course goes at the root of that and begins to undo that to give you that freedom without having to go to drugs. It does take a little longer, I have to admit. Doing the drugs is instant. You can smoke something, you can snort something or drink something, and you've got an instant high. This takes a little bit longer, but it's a surefire way. Okay? It gets you out of it and will continue to keep you out of it for your whole life.
How about the issues of fear and anxiety? What is something that this particular course does to help that? That's probably got to be one of the main issues of everyone.
Well, the fear and anxieties, you have to get to the root of them, where they come from. What are my fears? What are my anxieties? And everybody's going to express this in just a slightly different manner. You may have fear of losing your job. You may have a fear of losing your spouse or your children. You may have a fear of the drive-by shootings they have nowadays. You may have a fear of somebody stealing your car. The whole thing around fear revolves around a central issue around the body, around its possessions, around a self-centered way of life, if you will. In other words, you can't look at Mother Teresa and say she has a great many fears. She doesn't have a fear of losing a car. She doesn't have a fear of losing her life. She doesn't have fears of those natures because she's undone those fears. So the whole thing around fear is what the Course is based on. And it's saying that fear is something that we created. And it understands that you don't believe this in the beginning. It even sees that you will actively resist even looking at it. It says it doesn't matter. It actually says in the lessons itself, in the workbook, it tells you just to say these things. Nothing I see means anything, that I have given everything I see all the meaning it has for me. In other words, you could take your fear, the fear of losing your car, the fear of getting a divorce, the fear of losing your children, and you can say, I have given this situation involving my children, my car, my wife, all the meaning it has for me. And it says it knows that you don't mean it in the beginning, but just say it. So what it's trying to do is trying to replace your thinking of what you have developed over the years to deal with something which hasn't been an adequate response, to give you something new to think about. In other words, it's called right-mindedness versus wrong-mindedness. We have developed a wrong-mindedness way of dealing with things, and it hasn't helped us in proportion to the problem. So now it's giving us a new way to look at things. And as you're doing these things, you notice that your fears are beginning to disappear, that they're not as intense as they used to be. And when your fears are not as intense as they used to be, you make better decisions. And as your mind clears, you begin to make better choices in life. And as you make better choices, you can help others to make better choices. And that's the way it works.
Parenting is a very big issue, obviously, with parents, but certainly the children, you know, need the correct parenting. Otherwise, we'll have the same issues we have all the time. You of course, mentioned drive-by shootings and all the situations that we have, the chaos that seems to be around us. How does the Course help us as parents?
The way it helps is a very unique thing. Because I remember as a child, the one thing that I had really lacked, that I really needed, was to be introduced to who I was in reality. I can remember the exact moment when I became disappointed or disillusioned with the world's way of dealing with things, my parents' ways of dealing with things, within the sixth grade. I noticed now that I was going to have to fit into a society and deal with this society which I did not like, the society of anger, jobs, all the things that the ramifications about this, having to deal with money, having to deal with properties, having to deal with the government. I didn't want anything to do with it. And most children don't. But at one time or another, they had to give in and do something because it's a matter of survival at that point. So I noticed that my parents could not introduce me to why I came to this planet and what I had to express. I may have something to express like a Mozart or a Beethoven or a Rembrandt. I may have something very great to express. But no, I have to become a scientist or a doctor in order to survive. So I'm noticing that if a parent can grab a hold of the Course and give a child the freedom that they deserve and not have to think about that they have to make a living in order to survive, maybe they'd like to be like Mother Teresa. Maybe they'd just like to be a taxi cab driver. I don't know what it is a child came here to express, but there's a better chance of a parent coming to something and giving a child the space in their home when they come home from school and they're stimulated. They come home from their baseball field and football field and they're stimulated. The parents can give them the space that they can actually evolve in that space and then go back into the school the next day, and they're very different beings. They're very totally different beings. They can tell a child something in proportion to the problem. The child sees a problem. What is the problem? There are no problems apart from the mind. So they can go into it in a very logical way. They can see, I have given everything I see all the meaning has for me. A child comes up on the playground and hits you in the back of the head with a book. Well, there's going to be instant defenses, and it's honest defenses. And how do you deal with something like that? How do you deal with a bully that's 2 feet taller than you? Or how do the girls deal with people who are picking on them? I mean, you have to have answers in proportion to the problem. Parents don't have those answers. So inherent in the Course, doing the lesson of the day, gives you a lesson that will give you answers in proportion to the problem. And you can talk to the children with the truth, and they know a truth when they hear it. They know exactly when a parent tells them a lie or doesn't know the answer. And if you don't know the answer, it would be more honest to tell the children, I don't know, rather than telling them, well, just do this because I say so. So it's a basic fundamental, I call it an owner's manual, okay, that I always claim when I came to this planet, I didn't get an owner's manual with this body. Nothing to tell me what to do with it. So that's what I look to the Course for. It's a way of life.
All right, and one more issue, and of course this must be the most important one for most people, and that is, how does Course in Miracles help people find peace of mind? That seems to be what everyone is looking for. What is the basic way that Course in Miracles addresses the issue of peace of mind?
Well, the peace of mind, for the most part, when you're looking for it, it's an idea, isn't it? I mean, people think, well, what is peace of mind? Well, obviously, if you knew what it was, you wouldn't be looking for it, would you? So peace of mind is something that I think most of us experienced when we were children, but as we were growing up, we lost that peace of mind. So now what I'm finding out is that all we do is think now, and thoughts have crowded our mind. We have thoughts of insecurity, we have thoughts of our job, we have thoughts of success, we have thoughts of home life, of husbands, of wives. We have thoughts of what it should be or shouldn't be, and so now our heads are crowded with ideas, if you will. So to me, the Course, when you sit down with it and you do the lessons of the day, it actually widens the gap between the thoughts. In other words, your peace of mind is there someplace, but when you can widen the times between when you think, there is nothing there, and there's just peace of mind. But it's very difficult to do that in our day of age. It's just very tough. I mean, you're either on the freeway, you're going towards a job, you're coming from a job, or you're dealing with the job, or you're dealing with the children when you get home, or your parents, or whatever the deal is, you know, whatever the case may be. So peace of mind is something very different. It doesn't look for answers to anything. It sees that the answers are not in proportion to the problem. And not only not in proportion to the problem, they're actually sometimes worse than the problem. I'll give you for instance, when we came up with a thing of poverty in this country, we came up with what's called welfare. Now, welfare is now worse than the actual makes one quiet inside and begins to widen the gaps between the thoughts. When you sit and say to yourself, nothing I see means anything. I have given everything I see all the meaning it has for me. Then where is the problem?
You've got about 30 seconds. What would you like to say to people?
Well, I can tell you that anybody who starts a course, I would give them one great hint, is just to see it through. There will be ups and downs, and with anything that's authentic, it's that way. You're up against yourself, and it determines, yourself determines what it is that you get out of it. It's strictly up to you. How much ever energy you put into it is what you're going to get out of it.
Thank you, Ted, for being on the show. I didn't mean to cut you off there. All right, and I want to thank all of you for tuning in to Timeless Voyager Radio. This is Bruce Stephen Holmes, and I hope that your own personal voyage through life towards development of your highest potential is a joyous and successful one.